So Rashi is saying, why did they do this? Is because they're projecting onto the nation. Hold on one second. So Rashi says they're projecting onto Moshe their own emotions. What do I mean? When they say he left late, that he's thinking, he's spending all this time, he can't stop thinking badly about us, that's the very act that they were conjecturing about Moshe. Right? They're saying about Moshe that he's thinking badly of us, and they have no way of knowing what he's thinking about. And insofar as when he leaves early, they have no way of knowing if he's fighting with his wife or not. But they themselves were quarrelsome. They themselves couldn't get along with anybody, so they projected onto Moshe. They say, I'm a peaceful guy, but Moshe is the troublesome guy. I'm a person that looks correctly at life. Moshe is the one that looks incorrectly at life. They constantly deny their own true base emotions that they don't want to see in themselves. That is the purpose and benefit of gossiping.
When there's a women's tea party and they sit around and gossip about the neighbor or the woman that didn't come or this or that or the other, they're saying that they're talking about themselves.
That's correct. If you analyze it very carefully, you will see that they're talking about themselves. Correct. But they're talking about themselves in such a way that they're trying, their whole purpose is to deny their bad emotions and their base and bad feelings about themselves. They're trying to deny that they have base emotions. That's why people gossip so much, because they're spending their life denying their own bad traits. That's what people spend their whole life in gossiping. The life of a gossip is a life of denying your own bad traits.
So after we've been studying with a man called Rabbi Moskowitz for several years, we really should have overcome this.
Well, if you have, you have, and if you haven't, I'm sure you're working on it. That's all you could do. Okay? But...
Isn't this an emotional problem?
Yes, it is an emotional problem. It's a very unhappy life. It's a constant denial of your own bad traits. That's why you feel good about it when you finish gossiping, and especially when it's accepted by others. Most people, the proof that is right if it's accepted by others. And therefore, most people only speak to other people that accept their gossip. If you didn't accept their gossip, they wouldn't want to speak to you. Why? Because they have a need to protect their own evil and bad traits. That is the gossip. It's to protect them from seeing their own bad traits. What they're constantly doing day and night is saying, see, I'm not bad, he's bad. I'm not bad, she's bad. I'm not bad, they're bad. That's what they spend their life doing.
They're aware of what they're doing?
No, they're not aware. They were aware, it wouldn't be successful, they'd be very unhappy, because they'd have to face the truth. Now, I'd like to try to present a cure based on the Rashi's, what we just said, what he said about Lashon Hara. I'd like to present a method of cure for Lashon Hara or gossip. Okay? According to the nature of a human being, that he only operates based on two premises: the desire for pleasure and avoidance of pain. Okay? Now, gossip is an avoidance of pain, because if I didn't gossip, then I'd have to see my own bad traits, which is pain, which I don't want to see. Okay? Right. So therefore, what I do is I don't really check out the facts, and I don't really analyze the thing correctly. I just look at life from within, from a subjective view of the world, basically from within me I just look at the world based on my feelings. And it's only, and the usage of the world and the way I look at people, or about God for that matter, like in the case of Klal Yisrael and the nation of Israel where they spoke against God, the whole thing, the whole purpose was not to see their own emotions, you see, their own feelings, you see. But I say that the cure would be is to train yourself to be a scientist of life, where you do look at other people, but it's based on a proof of the facts and a method of interpretation that is held up scientifically and logically. Methodologically correct thinking. You see? By the way, large parts of Torah deal with that. And all of Mishlei deals with that, is how to get away from the emotional decisions and making objective decisions. But the thing is that if you start thinking of life, people, you'll only make a decision about a person when you have the... First of all, you have to get a method of understanding human nature. Large parts of Torah will help you in that. The study of Torah will help you in that. Once you have that method, then you must be very observant, or if somebody tells you facts, you must have a method when to accept facts from others so that everything becomes scientifically correct. And when it becomes scientifically correct, then there's no room for projection in that type of situation.
We're doing this quietly, right?
What do you mean?
Somebody's talking to us and we're scientifically listening and keeping our mouth shut.
That's correct. That's correct. That's correct. And these type of discussions that we have about life or about different things, suddenly they become second nature. You start thinking that way, and then you're able... Right now, let's say, for instance, you go and you hear a lot of gossip. Now, when you come home, take one of them and just analyze it. See on what basis you accept the facts. And then to analyze, even if you accept the facts, is that the only interpretation? Is there proof of that interpretation? On what basis is he making that interpretation? You started thinking like that, I think that Lashon Hara would pretty much fall by the wayside. Could you please repeat that question?
Are we sure we know when we're listening to gossip and when we're... I answered. That's all right. I have the answer.
What's the answer?
They told it to us.
Yeah, the answer is basically is as you gain knowledge, you'll know the difference. Could you please repeat that question?
Is there a hard and fast test for gossip?
All I'm saying is that you have to train your mind to be scientific about life, and slowly but surely, and also know this fact that we just said from Rashi, that most gossip is projection.
Right.
And therefore, when you listen, see if he's accepting facts that he has no basis to accept, and if you accept the facts, does that interpretation make sense, or is it total conjecture, or are there other possibilities of explaining the facts? If there are other possibilities, then you know he's only denying his own emotions.
And that we did about 2 weeks ago.
In what way?
We talked about how to isolate just the facts from somebody's talk or like the news broadcast. Usually,
usually
it's enclosed in their opinion.
Right. In other words, when a person speaks, you also have to separate between their body language and the adjectives, because many times, even when they're giving facts, it's also an interpretation. That we did say a few weeks ago. That's all. But all these things, as they start becoming second nature, all these methods and all these ideas about emotions and about life, as they start coming together and become part of your nature, then you're able to make decisions based on it and to start thinking about it. Can you please repeat that statement?
Is there a possibility that if you're pretty savvy and you're scientifically listening, that pretty soon you won't have anyone to talk to?
That's true. Your friends will definitely be shortened. The amount of people that you can talk to will definitely get less. I tell you, if you want to break up a friendship, if a person starts gossiping, start arguing with him and bring all your proofs why he's not right. And definitely you'll lose a lot of friends. Could you please repeat the question? Bill?
Yeah.
Could you repeat the question?
Do you think that Jonah was a good candidate for suicide?
I think that he could never commit suicide because the halacha would never allow him to. Therefore, he asked God to take him because he was in a situation where he, at that moment, he felt that his whole view of life, his whole cosmology, his whole philosophy of life would have to be totally changed, and therefore he could not continue.
Was that because of what God told him to do?
That's correct.
I thought he had lost his faith in God.
No, never.
Okay.
Absolutely never. That was Job. That story of Job. He had a question about God's justice. Jonah was a prophet. He never questioned God's existence or God's justice or anything. He just had a slightly different view of the picture of what was there.
Okay. I got the names mixed up. I meant Job. Was Job a candidate for suicide?
Yes, Job was definitely a candidate for suicide.
Okay. No, I know about Jonah. Yeah, okay.
In other words, what held Job in check, which he did not commit suicide, he says, maybe I could find God again and see how God's justice works. He says, if I could find an answer to that, then I could live. But if I cannot find an answer for that, then it's not worth living anymore.
How would he find that out, though? He didn't have a whole lot of he had his friends standing around convincing him.
That was the whole book of Job.
Yeah, Job.
Then when we went through Job, we showed all the arguments. Over the summer, we went through Job, we went through the different arguments, and how he came to the conclusion and what his answers were.
But we're touching on suicide now. I was just thinking in that vein.
Yeah, but once he found the answer, how he could fit the framework of God into his life, then he was able to accept all his losses.
Okay, all right.
So his search for justice from God was what kept him
alive. Just search for truth.
Right. Okay. I got it.
What I'd like to talk about is the development of a human being insofar as the development of Torah. Okay?
Right.
Now, when every human being that's born is basically a selfish being. In other words, there's two parts to the human. There's to the emotional part of the human. There's the animalistic part, and there's the conscience, right? Okay. Now, the animalistic part, that's really selfish. That's, megalomania is there and all the, all I know is me. You know what I mean?
Survival of the fittest.
What?
That's survival.
Right. I don't know if it's survival. I mean, it's just me. You know what I mean? Like, it's very selfish. Doesn't understand the word no. Okay? Now, the first no that it gets is because of the conscience. Okay? Now, the conscience uses three tools. One is fear, shame, and guilt. Okay? Those are the three. Right? Now, whenever you do something which is contrary to your conscience, so then you feel that the pain. So the pain stops you from doing the bad thing. Or simultaneously, it could force you, let's say somebody does something bad to you and you really hate them. But then the conscience says it's not nice to hate. So you can't hate the person that you want to hate. the only reason why, and so many times when you're nice to people, it's only because of the conscience. But the only reason why you follow the conscience is because you want to avoid that pain. So it's a selfish reason. It's not because of the person himself. What is that? Anyway, so that's why every human being must act out of selfishness. Clear?
Oh.
What? What was that?
Go ahead.
Okay. Now the thing is let's say when a person like this has a motive, he was raised in a certain way, he wants to become religious, and he starts studying Torah. And he sees the system of Torah that, let's say he learns Mishlei, and he sees the system of Mishlei is a very, very good life. So he wants to keep it because of a selfish reason. So he uses the system to benefit himself. That's the way he starts with the Torah system. He looks at the system, and he has to put it in his framework. It's the only framework he knows. The only framework he knows is a selfish framework. So therefore, he uses the system somehow to benefit himself. If he's a person that's competitive, he'll use the system to be successful. If he's looking for happiness, he'll use the system to find happiness. Whatever his needs are, he'll use the system for that purpose. Okay? That is the first relationship and the first stage of relating to Torah. Okay? Then when you relate to Torah, after a while, you recognize that there's a system, and there reaches a point in the study of the system, as you keep understanding the system and studying the system, you recognize that you are just part and parcel of that system. You recognize that you're not outside the system, but you are no different than a star is to the galaxy. In other words, one star is just a unit, but when you look at all the stars, you look at them as a system. So each star only has a value insofar as the system is concerned. So you recognize that your life is only that which is part of the system.
That's good.
That's the first stage of not being selfish, where you recognize that you identify with others not as a selfish thing. You see, the identification, when you have a friend, we have identification. But that's a psychological thing, and that psychological thing, the first stage would be that you are an extension of me. And therefore, I identify with you. The second stage, I identify with you because we're all part of the same species. I'm looking at it from the universal point of view. In other words, I pull out of myself and I'm able to look at myself as let's say there would be a person with a microscope up in the heavens, and he would look down on us with his microscope. He would look at the different groups of people as a unit, different than a tiger or an elephant. But he would look at the system. That's how you have the ability to look at yourself. That would be the second stage, but that second stage would recognize a system of justice. You see, that there has to be a system of justice because we can't operate without justice, and therefore, because I have to relate to my fellow human being, so therefore, I recognize that since I'm a part of it all, so therefore I'm a part of it all, I recognize that for this system to operate, there must be a system that makes us operate, and that is justice. Okay? If I look at myself, I say, what's my job in the system? And I do my job in the system. As I recognize what my what my responsibility is to the system, so that's what I do to the system, for the system. That's the second stage. But however, what I do not have in the second stage is kindness.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I got a little lost there. What is your job in the second stage?
In the second stage, I have to look at myself as part of the system.
Right.
Now, what am I supposed to do as part of the system? Like, let's say, for instance, there's a group of, they have these wild dogs, right, that they go hunting together. Now, each one knows exactly what they're supposed to do. One does one thing and chases them to the other. They have a whole system. Or, for instance, if you look at a hive, and there are many, many different bees or whatever, or ants, each one has a different job in the system that, based on their nature, the way they were created, they know exactly, they sense, they don't know, they sense exactly what their job is, and each one does their job. But the only thing is, I have to know consciously what my job is in the system.
You put justice in this frame of thinking?
That's right.
Justice.
Justice is to know your job. Let me give you a different illustration. An evil person, to be successful, he can only be successful through justice. I think Plato said this. Why? Because let's say, for instance, three people want to rob a bank. One has to go in the, one has to be in the getaway car. One holds the gun on the people, and one collects the money. Let's say one of them doesn't do their job. The whole thing fails. You see? So even so far as doing evil, you must rely on justice. Justice is doing your job. The only thing is, you have to study the system to recognize what your job is, what your purpose is, what you have to do for the system.
Rabbi, is that tantamount to figuring out what your personal purpose or mission is in life?
I don't want to use that term because people feel, you know, like that God told me what to do, you know? I'm saying you have to figure out, according to your nature and according to the situation that you're in, what your job is, what your responsibility is. I think that's the best word.
Insofar as the species?
Insofar as the species are concerned, insofar as yourself, what's your responsibility to yourself, and what's your responsibility to others, and to which others do you have a responsibility? I'm not responsible. You can't be responsible for the whole world. You have a certain responsibility, so you have to see who you are responsible to based on, like, for instance, a person that works, right? So he has to support the family. Let's take a family. A family is that type of system. Let's say, for instance, not in the 90s, but years ago, it was the husband that would go out to work. The woman would have her responsibility in the home, and the children would be given certain responsibilities in the house. And some of their responsibility is to develop as a human being. So we would educate them. Their part of their is to do their homework and do their studies. That's their responsibility. Then we try to educate them as part of the system, so therefore they have certain responsibilities in the house. So that is a small system that each one has to do. Each one gets their responsibility. So that, insofar as the home is concerned, you could see very simply what the system is.
Why is that called justice?
Because you're saying that if we don't do our little part in the system, then we break down the system of justice. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying we're breaking down the system, therefore that is unjust. Justice is to perpetuate, to make sure that you do your job in the system. That's why, in other words, in law, basically, they make sure you don't destroy the system. In other words, like if you rob, if you steal, if you murder, you understand, if you punch somebody out, if you drive too fast, you don't stop at a red light. So they are protecting the system. Those laws protect the system, so we have certain punishments for that. Now, when you're running a family, you must run by a certain system where everybody has their responsibility. And in this society, everybody must have their responsibility. Now, most of the time, by most people, you have to force them to keep their responsibility. But via the study of Torah, you recognize that you must keep a system here. So therefore, since you recognize that there must be a system, so you recognize your place in the system.
Rabbi, I can understand how you do that, practically speaking, in a family environment, because you just make some decisions about the various responsibilities that need to be made. But what about your position in the society or your responsibility there? I understand, I think, the sort of macro concept. What I'm wondering is, how do you figure out that in a practical way, what your individual responsibility would be?
Well, I guess after you think... Well, let me try, like, in a school, okay?
Okay.
Let's say you're in a school, okay? There are teachers, and there's administrators, and there's students.
Right.
Okay? Now, the thing is that if each one knows what his job is without being forced to do it, in other words, in and of yourself, you know your responsibility, so then the teacher knows exactly what he has to do, and when it goes it over into the place of administration, then he turns to administration to tell him what to do. And insofar as the student is concerned, their responsibility is to follow the rules of the school, that's from the administration, follow the rules of the classroom, and to try and gain knowledge from the teacher. So each one has their responsibility in the school.
Okay, can I extrapolate that then?
Now, let's say, for instance, you live in a city, right? Well, then the city has different things in the city. You know what I mean? Like, first of all, you have a job. Your job, let's say, for instance, you're a shoemaker. Well, first of all, you should know that your job as a shoemaker is to make sure that the shoes last as long as possible and not to cheat and be stingy on it, but that's your job as a shoemaker. But let's say, for instance, you do have time to do other things in the evening for the community. So then you might get involved in education. You might feel you have knowledge. I'm not talking about people that fool themselves. I'm talking about where you have real knowledge of certain things. So then you might join a certain organization. Maybe you'll join an organization to help clean the environment. But I don't know. Whatever you feel is important. A lot of these things, well, you'll say, well, I only have X amount of time, and this is a good thing, but I think there's something that I could do which is more important and accomplish more. In other words, let's say, for instance, you could work out and clean the environment, but you could also, simultaneously, you could also educate people about the truth. And I think if you educate people about the truth, that's a more important thing, because that'll get people to live the good life and the environment will be cleaned up, because everybody will see the truth. So maybe it's better to teach the truth if you only have that amount of time. Or you might decide there are more people that will help clean up the environment, because that's how society does that, but there are very few people that teach Torah. Well, let's say, for instance, in charity. There are a lot of people that will give to for cancer, but how many people will give for people to learn Torah? You know what I mean? So you might say, well, let's say there's two poor people. One can get money from another place. One has no place to get money. So again, I mean, these decisions, as you study Torah, you start seeing how to figure out what your responsibility is and where to put your energy. It also depends on your ability. Does that help, Doug?
Yeah, I think so.
Now, what do you want to ask? I'm sorry.
Oh, I was wondering if when you go into a school, you accept a position there, you are more or less told what to do, what your responsibilities are by someone who's already sort of established the system. And I was wondering if that's analogous to living in a city or a county or a state or a...
Well, it depends. You have to be careful. I'm talking about a totally just system. If the system is unjust, then there's something else. Then you have to analyze when you should obey the system and when not.
Right, right.
I mean, that becomes another area of justice. If you live in Germany during the during the Nazi regime, then obeying the system would be unjust.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, part of this is really finding out what are your unique talents and abilities.
Well, that would be part of it, but I mean, that is a part of it. But there's others. Let's say you have a situation where it might not be part of your ability, but you have to do it because there's nobody else to do it.
Right.
You understand? There could be many factors in deciding what your responsibility is in in your given situation.
I appreciate that there is an unlimited number of mitigating circumstances that dictate the outcome of our experiences in life as we go day by day, year by year. Now, I was thinking something that you said just previously, relating to the stars in the galaxy. It's part of a system. We are a part of a system. We're here. The thing that came to my mind is, in spite of everything, good, bad, justice, Torah, all that makes life good or evil, whatever, is there a goal? I mean, how does it all end up? How does it end up?
Well, all I know is that a person has to know how to live his life correctly. That's what we're discussing.
Okay, I understand that, but he has to learn that. He has to come across information that's going to give him some guidelines.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's the Torah.
That's right.
Okay. Is that answer your question?
I'll let it lie for a bit.
Okay. Okay.
What do you mean by responsibility? Because if you say that the responsibility is the artificial responsibility of a given situation, so then following orders in Nazi Germany would be correct, would be just.
Right.
Those are the artificial situations. Artificial,
I understand, but
the situation.
I understand, but the system itself is unjust. In other words, if somebody tells me to murder somebody, let's say the government would tell me, we want you to murder somebody. Well, I see that as being unjust. So
right,
I can't.
So I'm asking, you're saying that justice is doing what your responsibility.
Yeah,
I'm
understand.
I'm asking what you mean by responsibility.
Oh, you mean what's the difference between a correct system and an unjust system?
Well, you're giving a definition of justice, so you're saying it's doing your responsibility.
Right, so.
What do you mean by responsibility? You mean by some absolute truth?
In other words, sometimes a person has responsibility based on his conscience. Now, the conscience could tell him to do wrong. Let's say I was raised by parents that were raised in a society that my conscience tells me to do the wrong thing. So but the knowledge of Torah will tell me not to follow that part of my conscience. Because that is unjust. I'm talking about the system of Torah, which I'm accepting as absolute for this discussion. Well, for the person that doesn't have Torah, then he would have to figure out with his own mind what is a system of justice.
So for example, in one of the examples we gave was a family unit. So you said that.
But what is
father usually had the responsibility of being
okay.
So now let's say I'm just trying to fit in an example. So now let's say a situation was where the wife had a better opportunity to
make money. Well, then maybe they would make a decision that they take on different responsibilities. They have the right to do that. In other words,
is it a question of justice? I mean,
yeah, because the thing is that we have a system. Now we're talking about the family unit as a system, right?
Right.
Now we have to make the system work the best. The best way to make this system work, that is justice.
Okay.
So therefore, your responsibility is to make sure this system
within the best
the best but for this system.
Oh,
okay. You got it?
Yeah.
Optimizing, essentially?
Yeah.
So we're talking, what'd you say? I'm sorry.
We're talking about optimizing?
Yeah, in other words, when you're working in a system, what is best for that system?
Not for you, but for the system.
Well, it has to be good for you, too. You're part of the system. You're part, well, the thing is, there's two things. I mean, if you're totally selfish, then of course you can't live according to a system. You only use the system, but you're above the system. That's the selfish part. The second thing is where you recognize that being part of the system is the ultimate. Now, but the only thing is you do have to eat. Yeah, you have to exercise. You have to be healthy. And you could enjoy life. You could enjoy a piece of cake. I mean, there's nothing against enjoyment, but you can't do anything that, you can't take on pleasures that would destroy the system. Or destroy yourself, for that matter, because you are part of the system. You can't destroy yourself either, just like you can't destroy some other part of the system.
Okay, I guess the part that I struggle with on this is that the answer, in a given set of circumstances, doesn't seem to be absolutely determinable. For example, you teach, okay?
Right.
You could probably, if you put the word out, have people begging you to conduct more classes than it's physically possible for you to give.
Well, then that's like asking a star to take care of a wolf. You know, they take care of some of the animals. I mean, it'd kill them.
Right.
The star can't do that.
Exactly. So, on the other extreme, if you gave no classes, you know, you might argue to yourself that that's not just for the system. The exact right balance point between,
right,
say, and I'm just narrowing it down to two things, an external draw of people wanting you to teach versus your own need for personal refreshment and renewal. Just those two variables, it's hard for me to... I'm wondering how, other than just the person making a subjective judgment, do you find the absolutely correct point in it?
Well, the thing is that, in other words, like this, there are... In other words, we could give general rules, like Mishlei, which is even more particular than any other part of Torah. It really deals with particulars. But even within there, after you study Mishlei, right, then your mind is trained to think in a certain way. Now, when a particular situation comes up, that training comes into play.
Mm.
Now, how you decide in that particular, where's the exact line, then you should have all the factors, and then you start putting all the factors into play and evaluate all the different factors. Let's say it's like you said, how much energy do I have? Well, let's say, for instance, there's some people that could work for 16 hours a day and they're totally refreshed. Some people could work 3 hours a day and that's just about as much as they could take, and maybe too much. So a person has to evaluate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, that you're right. The variables are infinite, but the principles are not.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Once you learn the principles of how to think, then how you apply it in particular cases, you'll investigate the case, but the mind is trained. That's why it's so important to have a trained mind.
So you've got to essentially optimize yourself and balancing yourself and the system's needs.
That's correct. And when you recognize... When you really see that, you see, that will make you content. You'll be happy to do these things because you see that's within your nature. That's the nature of the human being. And the Torah will help you see that that's your nature. And the Torah will help you see exactly how to do it. To do both. To recognize yourself as an individual and simultaneously to recognize yourself as I am part of the species.
If we're following this system the best we can and keep on learning, and we find ourselves in the midst of a situation where the system doesn't come into play, just be a participant? Can we?
Well, I don't know. You'll have to give me an illustration. I'm not sure I understand what you mean. Where is there a case where either the self or the system doesn't come into play?
When I go to a meeting of people that know nothing about the system.
Right. Now, the thing is that when you go to this meeting, are you going to this meeting because justice demands that you go to this meeting?
No.
Or you go to this meeting because it satisfies a need in you?
Because somebody asked me to go.
And that satisfies a need in you?
No.
What?
On the contrary.
Yeah, but the thing is that you're doing it because, in other words, something in your conscience says, that you want to accept what this person says, or you want to be accepted by this person. In other words, there's some personal need that you're satisfying. It's not a responsibility. You might feel it as a responsibility as part of your conscience, but it might not really be a responsibility as part of the system of Torah.
Okay, I hear you. Responsibility, I guess, is the word I wanted.
Right. So therefore, sometimes the conscience makes you feel responsible for something that is not in reality your responsibility.
Okay. So, yeah. I hear. Thank you.
All right. Now, that takes us to the third step, and that is kindness. Okay? And that is that I have to help people even though it is not part of the system of justice. In other words, mercy or kindness. Okay? That part of the development of the human being comes as a result totally and only because of his relationship to God. There is no rational, there is no system in the world which shows kindness. Every system in the world that you see has a practical benefit. There's a practical reason for every part of the system. There's some practical reason there. You understand when you read or watch these nature programs, you'll see every single thing has a practical purpose. Justice is the practicality of the world. You see, of the human species. I'm sorry. Justice is the system that keeps the human species together. But kindness is not part of that. Why should I help a person personally? Why should I take into consideration a person's emotions? Person feels hurt. It's not my fault. And let's say a person does his own thing, and he gets consequences as a result of that. Now the person is in bad shape because of the consequences. Well, the guy caused it himself. Now, yet mercy would say, well, the guy right now, even though he caused it himself, is in trouble. Now, mercy would tell me to go help the guy, not justice. You understand?
Mercy or kindness?
Mercy or kindness, yeah.
Would justice in that case be indifferent?
Yeah, justice would be indifferent. It's not my responsibility. My responsibility is not to the individual. My responsibility is to the system. Now, if somebody does something stupid and gets the consequences, as long as it doesn't affect the system, it's not my business. Why should I worry about him in particular? In other words, I have to take care of the particular person. I have to help the person even though the guy did stupid things. Now he's getting the consequences. Why should I worry about it? You see? The answer is that is dependent on my relationship to God. Now, sages say that we're obligated to imitate God. And imitate God means that just like he is merciful, I should also be merciful. You see? Now, the thing is that the only reason why I am merciful is because I recognize that this is God's will. And because I relate to God and that I want to fulfill his will, so since I see God as merciful, therefore I become merciful. Any other type of mercy, again, stems from the conscience or from identification, from the psychological things. But however, the ultimate, in fact, Maimonides says at the end of his book on the guide, his guide for the perplexed, he says, now you truly love people. Truly love people means once you have a relationship with God through your knowledge of God, then there reaches a part that I want to be like God, and I want to imitate God, and I want to be part of God's will. You see, that's when you become a merciful person, and you identify with the needs and the personal needs of the people, but that comes via God. That is the third stage and final stage of the development of the human being. And I think that that probably understanding God's mercy and where you should be merciful and where you should not be merciful by studying God's system, I think that can only come through prophecy. In other words, justice, I think, a person could figure out on his own to a certain extent. I mean, with the help of Torah, it's more perfect. It's, you know what I mean? And it's much quicker because you have the Torah to guide you. But I think a person can recognize that you need some system of justice. Well, once you accept God, you recognize that God wants a system of justice. But mercy, you can only get through prophecy. There's no place in the universe that you can see the idea of mercy except through prophecy and how far you should go. There's only...
Any other word to use? For prophecy?
By prophecy, I mean, like the Torah is all prophecy. The whole Tanakh is prophecy. So by studying the Torah and understand the prophecies, you will learn, and with the help of our sages and commentaries, you will be able to understand the ideas of mercy through them. I'm not saying you need personal prophecy. I mean, if you have personal prophecy, then fine, then you can get it direct from God. But I'm saying that there's also direct, in a certain way, direct from God, but the only thing is that many times they're too abstract for us to understand. But to the best of our ability, as we develop in Torah, we have an understanding of what God's mercy is.
Yeah, but the prophecy we get from Torah is personal.
Yeah, that's true. It's personal to the nation. And to the non-Jews, whoever studies it, like an Ochai.
It's personal to each person that believes it.
That's right. That's right. It's personal when you study it. That's correct.
There was justice and kindness. What did we begin with?
We began with selfish, that a human being is born totally selfish. Totally self-absorbed.
But that was the starting point, right?
That was the starting point. We even showed how the conscience is really selfishness because he just can't take the pain of his shame or guilt or fear, so then he gives in to it. Like, for instance, if you're invited to a meeting that you don't want to go, you might feel bad because you're going to feel how people are going to think of me. You know what I mean? Something like that. So once you start thinking that way, that's a selfish thought. Justice would say, well, is it my responsibility to the system? Is there any benefit to the system, any benefit to me? You see?
Make my judgment on that basis.
That's the way you should make a decision based on either there's some benefit to me, or, which is not unjust, or there's some benefit to the system. But just to give in without thought because I feel guilty, I don't know if I should give in to that guilt. I might be better off sitting home studying Torah. Unless there's a certain political loss. Let's say you could get a job through going, you know what I mean? Well, let's say, for instance, if you go, you could help people see Torah. You'd be able to talk to them. Well, maybe that's a responsibility, you know what I mean? But just about to give in because I feel some guilt or I feel that people will like me, I don't know if I would give in to that.
The sense you said was fear, guilt, and shame.
That's correct.
That's what the conscience is that right?
That's right.
That points us to these things that are fearful or shameful or...
I'll give you an extreme situation that maybe help you. You ever go someplace, especially where kids that are not good actors or actresses, and suddenly they get up there and you feel embarrassed? That ever happened to you?
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, what happens there is you identify with these kids. There's some desire in you, maybe, to get up and act. And so, therefore, because identification is an extension of you, so you're embarrassed for what they're doing as if you were doing it. So, in other words, they're doing something that you sense, that you yourself look at, that the people are laughing at. Right? Now, that is non-acceptance by the society, by people. That's an embarrassing thing, not to be accepted by people. So, therefore, you're embarrassed for them. Because you identify with them. You see how it works?
What's the moral there?
No, what I'm trying to show you is that whenever you feel shame, even in a strange situation where you don't see, in other words, whenever you feel shame, you have to see what's, you have a desire that the conscience is telling you you're wrong.
Okay, I...
Now, I'm trying to show you, even where you're just watching and somebody does something stupid, you feel embarrassed. Now, I'm saying the reason for that, as I'm showing you, is that you're identifying with the actor or actress, and they are doing something stupid where people are looking at them in an incorrect way. So therefore, you become embarrassed because you identify with them as if you were doing it. Well, let's say sometimes if you're watching a show and somebody does something and you feel uncomfortable, well, it might be they're doing something that you have a desire for. You might not never do it in your life, but you have a desire, and when they do it, that awakens your desire, and as soon as your desire is awakened, your guilt or your shame is awakened. I'm trying to show you cases where no matter what, where it seems like it has nothing to do with you and yet you feel embarrassed, I'm saying that no, it does have to do with you. I'm trying to show you the furthest case. You understand where you sometimes you imagine, well, I'm not, in other words, if the conscience, if the shame is only awakened where you have a desire to do the wrong thing, then I don't have any desire to do the wrong thing in these cases. The answer is you do. Somehow you're identifying with either the person that's embarrassed or you're identifying with the character in a movie that's doing something that awakens your desire, which immediately, or you don't feel the desire, that's bypassed, because you don't want to see that, and what's awakened is the shame, which doesn't even allow the thought to come forward. You see what I mean?
I see it.
That's all self. That's all part of the selfish part of the human being.
I see. That's what.
That is not goodness. Even if you do goodness, that's not real goodness. Real goodness comes when the mind sees their true part of the system, where their true purpose. Well, I hate to use the word purpose because we don't know our purpose. You know what I mean? But it's our responsibility within the system.
Funny place where to start, isn't it?
What?
Strange thing to start with is selfishness and expect anything out of it.
Well, where you start, I don't know what tell you where to start. Everybody starts, you know, different. But I'm just giving an overall view of the development of a human being insofar as his relationship to Torah is concerned. Go ahead.
Can the kindness be a result of justice?
How?
Like, for example, a lot of these big companies nowadays, they find that they offer better working conditions for the employees, or they offer...
Oh, you're right. You're right.
They give benefits to the...
Right, but
to have a better system operating.
Yeah, that type of kindness that Joey is talking about is really practical. I'm only kind so I can get something out of it.
That's sort of a selfishness on a company basis.
That's right. Selfishness on a universal basis.
Well, that's how we're defining justice, really.
No,
justice is selfishness on a universal basis.
No, I'm saying, no, I'm trying to define the human being, not the system of justice. I'm really trying to explain the human being. The human being will recognize himself that he is, through a study of Torah, he will recognize himself that he is part and parcel of the system. In other words, he recognizes himself as an individual. He has to eat, he enjoys things. Simultaneously, he recognizes himself as part of his system. You see? And therefore, he operates in that way. But certain people have justice only for practical reasons, like you just showed me. It's only practical reasons, not because you are a person that's on the level of justice. But you keep justice for practical reasons. Or you keep justice because of your conscience. Or you keep justice because God says you'll go to heaven. That is not... Well, we're talking about the development of an individual and his relationship to the idea of Torah. You see? He starts out that he recognizes that there is a system, so he uses the system for his benefit. He could use the system for competition. He could use the system to satisfy a religious emotion. He could use the system to get to the world to come. That's using the system all as a selfish thing. You see? But then as he studies Torah, he recognizes himself that he is one object in the system. He's like one star in the system of stars. He's one zebra in the herd of zebras.
Yeah.
You see? He's able to do that. He's able to pull himself out and look at himself objectively as an individual, as a part of a system. Simultaneously, he recognizes his personal needs. But I'm talking about the development of a human being and how he looks at himself. And when, in other words, you might, let's say you're merciful because you keep halacha. But you are not the, by nature, a merciful person until you've reached that level of relationship to God. You see? So what I'm talking about is not doing acts of mercy. When you keep halacha, a lot of the halachas are acts of mercy. A lot of the acts are acts of justice. But how you relate to that system as a human being, personally relate to it, that is three levels of the development. That is three levels of development.
Isn't it a safe haven for people to be part of group of a system?
Well, the thing is that, yeah, I hear what you're saying. In other words, if I am on the selfish level, then being part of the group is really, I am part of the group only for my own benefit. You see? But the higher level is a recognition, a separation of the selfishness, and I'm able to look at myself objectively and look at myself as one of the herd. Or one of the stars in the galaxies.
But still working your own thing out. Or still as an individual becoming what you're supposed to become.
Yeah, so what would happen?
Pardon?
So what are you saying? Well, what should happen?
The same thing you're saying, that... I look at myself as part of a species. I look at myself as part of the group. But the main thing about all of this is that I have to work with myself only for the benefit of myself.
Yeah, well, you see, the selfish part only looks at the group only insofar as the group satisfies me. Some part of me it satisfies. But insofar as I pull out, I recognize that I'm part of the group as an objective view of the, it's as if I would be able to go up in the sky with a microscope and look down and see myself as part of the group. In other words, it's not a selfish thing, it's totally an objective view of myself. It's like looking at myself from the outside. It's an objective view of the self.
I hear you.
A selfish view is I can only see everything around me only insofar as it relates to me, as insofar as it's an extension of me. The other one is a totally separation, objective view of the total picture.
Explain, isn't it?
What?
That's okay. I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
So then, objectively, a person could look at the objective system and just see himself as just, okay, my objective is to follow Allah and just learn Torah. And
it is possible that a person might see that. If he's really objective and he sees that that's what his purpose in life is, it's possible. I don't know.
That's pretty long road ahead to really see a person.
To see yourself objectively.
Because you can see yourself as part of a system, but you may not know what your role in that system is.
Well, knowing what your role is, I think that once you reach that level, I mean, you would know how to operate in that level. Naturally, you would know how to operate in that level. If you didn't know how to operate in that level, you wouldn't be on the level.
I heard the P word in there.
What word?
The P word.
What's that?
Purpose.
Yeah, Rabbi, you mentioned knowing your purpose.
By purpose, I'll be very careful. I don't mean how others look at it, that they're trying to look in themselves as part of a cosmic, you know, and God. And they're very on a very high, you know. That's not even, you know what I mean? That's beyond reality. I'm saying that insofar as you see yourself, that's why I like to say responsibility. I'm sorry if I use the P word. I'm sorry, I'm wrong. But what I really want to know is, you know, what I really want to say is responsibility. Hold on. Okay.
Let me elaborate on that just a little bit. Would it, if a person makes an objective assessment of themselves, everyone has strengths, natural abilities, natural talents of one sort or another, and a person realizes that they have a huge, strong interest in, say, physics, and that they're very good at physics, and they're drawn to physics. Is it inappropriate for them to reach the conclusion that my purpose in life is to be involved in physics?
Well, let's say, for instance, if you were to go study physics, your family would starve to death. Would you say that you should give in to that desire? Would justice say you should give in to that desire?
No, but presumably one has choice.
Well, let's say, for instance, you might be drawn to physics, but you're able to teach Torah in a situation where nobody else could do it. And you're the only one that could do it.
But your family might starve there, too.
That's true.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But you understand what I'm saying. You have to evaluate the total situation. Just because you have a strong desire or something, I mean, if you could do it that way, that's fine. But maybe your responsibility is something else in the situation that you're in.
For some reason, Rabbi, I keep coming back to a frustration that we keep saying we have to do an evaluation, but we never identify exactly how it is done on a practical basis.
We're not being very practical.
Yeah.
In other words, sooner or later, you have to reach the decision, okay.
I told you, I mean, see, what you want is like A, B, C, multiple choice. There is none. You must know this. I'll put it in another way. The knowledge of Torah that you have, I say that you could make an evaluation today. However, in 1 year from now, you might reevaluate yourself and come to different conclusions based on your knowledge, on the knowledge that you've gained over the year. But I can't give you a specific thing. You have the knowledge. You have the knowledge to know what your responsibilities are. And you can make decisions on it. Now, the only thing is, as you study Torah, maybe in a year you reevaluate yourself. Well, I made a mistake, and I have to change my direction of what my justice is. But I can't. But what you're looking for is like a multiple choice, like they have questionnaires, multiple choice, that objectively you can make the decision. There's a certain matter of intuition. You have all the knowledge, and then you have to allow yourself, you know, to make a decision. You don't have, you know what I mean? Not everything is multiple choice. we were trained in the school to regurgitate everything the teacher teaches us. And that's how we look at life. Tell me all the possibilities and tell me all the answers and that's it. And then I'll memorize it and have an answer. There isn't. You have all the information. You have the knowledge of Mishlei, of all the discussions that we have in your own studies of Torah and your own analysis. All these things you have. Now, based on that, you make a decision. Now, if you're wrong, okay, so there, you repent in 2 years when you find out, when you gain more knowledge that you made a mistake, you repent and you'll change your ways. That's life.
It's more or less a changing of our justice system than it is of any job change or anything like that.
That's correct. The view of this, I'm not even talking about in actions. I'm talking about the development of the human being. The total human being changes. I'm saying there's three distinct changes in the human being, how he relates to the world. The first is he looks at himself totally from the whole world is only viewed from his point of view. The world started with his birth and the world will end with his death. That's the selfish view of life. There is nothing else in life. The objective, the second stage is the objective view, where you're able to pull out of that selfishness and look at yourself as part of a system. And then you can look at yourself as only as trying to fulfill the will of God. Pardon?
Did you say the last one? Fulfilling the will of God?
Yeah, that's mercy. That's a different, that's the next level of a human being. That your total being is only to try to be within the will of God.
That's about a merciful, right?
That's merciful, right. Doug, you follow what I'm saying?
I hear you. Actually, I wasn't looking for multiple choice, but I was looking for more of a structured methodology.
That's right. You're looking for structure. That's correct. And I'm saying there is no structure. There's all the knowledge in your mind, and now you just let your mind work on what is your responsibility.
Perfect.
And then you'll associate to the knowledge that you need from all the knowledge that you have. Insofar as you don't have knowledge, so in 2 years when you get that knowledge, you make a reevaluation. It's in Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 14. And now the background is that Moshe said that he couldn't endure running the nation by himself anymore. He needed help, and so he told the people what he's going to do, that he's going to appoint judges and different level of judges, and he told them his plan. He says, and you answered me, and you said it is good the thing that you speak to do. Okay? So according to the verse, it seems to be that they're accepting Moshe's idea about running the government and the change of the government. Okay? Now Rashi says, when you decided this matter, it was for your benefit. You weren't thinking objectively of the system, but you're only thinking of your own benefit. Because you should have answered, Moshe, our teacher, from who is it better to learn? From you or from your students? Is it not from you that you have put in... So it uses the word suffer, tsar, meaning suffering, but it means that he didn't suffer in the studies, but he put in all his energy, so much involvement that he gained more than anybody else. So you that put in all this energy... So you should have answered that, yeah, it's true, it might be better for you, but for us it would be a catastrophe because we're not getting it from you. We should get it from you directly, and we shouldn't have accepted this, that we should get a secondary thing. So then, since you didn't answer that, therefore I know your what's in your thoughts. You said what's in your thoughts. You thought that now you'll appoint over us many judges. And if they don't know me like a relative or a friend, so that they'll be partial to me, then we will bring him gifts, and then he'll be partial to me. Okay? So Rashi says that Moshe was saying the facts, what they said in the verse, but Rashi is saying that the intent was not Moshe's intent, it wasn't the same intent as Moshe, but it was their own personal intent, their own personal gain, that they accepted Moshe's way. Yeah, we have to ask the question, how did Moshe know this information? Where did he get the information from?
What information?
What their intent was. How does he know what's on their mind?
How do we know that he knows?
No, Rashi says he knows. I'm accepting Rashi.
Oh, okay, right.
But according to Rashi, how did Moshe know? I mean, if he can't prove it, then like we said the other time, that's just Lashon Hara. That's just gossip. Now, how did Moshe know this information, what's on the people's mind? What was his method of interpreting their intent and their purpose? In other words, I'm also asking, where did Rashi get it from? From the verse. In other words, in the verse it says what they answered, the words what they answered. Now Rashi is saying that somehow Moshe knew that was not their intent. The intent was different than his intent, the same information.
Can you read exactly what the people said?
In the verse?
Yeah.
It says, and you answered me and said, the thing is good that you have spoken to do. Go ahead.
Okay, I can think of two possible interpretations, at least from my standpoint. One is that he recognized that if the people said that, okay, this is a good thing, that they were clearly not recognizing that learning from his students from Moses' students would be worse for them, and therefore they had to have had some other agenda.
I don't follow that argument. Can you please repeat that argument?
Okay. I'm sorry, I'm having trouble formulating my words. Moses hears the statement, and he realizes that the people have to know that learning from someone other than Moses is not as good for them as learning from Moses directly.
Right.
So therefore, he has to presume that they have another motivation.
Correct.
Now, how he got the motivation that they'll be able to bribe the judges is beyond me.
But I agree with you. I agree with you. There are two motivations for having a lot of judges. One motivation is because just to make it easier for Moshe, which that was definitely not their agenda, or it would be better for them. Okay? But in other words, Moshe knew that it was benefit for them, that they saw it as a benefit for them. But he knew that one benefit for them would be to have him. And since they didn't choose that, and that would have been the greater benefit, then he has to look for a different motive why they're taking the other thing.
Right?
The only other motive is that there are a lot of judges. There are a lot of judges. You're going to be able to find a few that you could bribe. They realize that most of you couldn't, but after a while they'll be able to find and corrupt the people.
Yeah, but the flip side of that is Moses saw that he couldn't continue to do what he was doing because it was wearing him out, so he comes up with an alternate plan.
Right.
Okay? Now, if the people are at a high level, why wouldn't they look at the situation and realize,
Yeah, but that's what we've been saying all along. they were constantly involved in their own strife and their own things. He knew they weren't on a level to do be nice. For justice, you know what I mean? To do it because it would be, that he knew was out. He had to have some benefit.
Yeah, but
now, he says the real benefit would be if for there, you know, if they had him. But since they didn't accept that benefit, so he had to find some other benefit.
Didn't offer that solution.
Pardon?
Didn't offer that solution. He said, we're going to do it the other way.
So he said, but they said it is acceptable to us.
Well, they didn't fight back or say no.
Right. They said, on the contrary, they said it's acceptable. Why did they say it's acceptable? According to Moshe, the greatest benefit would have been for them. If it wasn't acceptable to them, and they would have just asked for him to do it.
Yeah, but that presumes that they're willing to eat up sort of the goose that lays the golden eggs. I mean, it's not beyond reason to assume that the people would realize, hey, look, this guy's burning himself out. He's going to have a heart attack. If he doesn't do an alternate thing, we'll lose him entirely. And, yeah, they griped and moaned against him, but I don't know that they really wanted to get rid of him completely.
All right. Let me give you an illustration. Were you ever in a real angry mood?
I've been known to do that.
Okay, now that moment, could you see anything nice about the person that you're angry with or think of doing them a benefit at the moment of your anger?
Probably not.
Okay. Now, let's say these people were totally selfish. That's what he's been saying all along. He says these people are selfish. They got in fights. They couldn't accept the leaders. They got in fights with each other. They're always involved in these petty things. That's what he's saying about them. According to Rashi, that's what he's saying about them.
Okay.
So they couldn't see the... In other words, if there's two benefits, one is fits in with their emotions and they're totally involved in their emotional life, which one are they going to see? They're people that smoke, right? Now, they hear all the what the doctors say. Then why do they continue smoking? Don't they know how harmful it is? Yeah. Go, Shirley.
How can I myself alone bear your cumbrance?
Yeah, what was that verse? 13? 12, you guys.
How can I myself alone bear your cumbrance and your burden and your strife?
Right, and we explained that last week, that was the nature of the people. Last week or 2 weeks ago, I don't remember, we had it on tape, about how the people were relating to him. So they're totally involved in this thing. So he knew that they would look at, in other words, that once he saw the two possibilities, so one was better than the correct possibility they didn't choose, so therefore he has to interpret it in an emotional way. Got it? I just want to add one point to this, and that is that in general, I mean, we were talking last time methods of interpreting, people's nature. In general, to interpret the nature, that's also another way of interpreting. When there's two logical possibilities and somebody gives an irrational possibility, then you must look at the irrational part of the person, which is the emotions.
Could you repeat that?
In other words, when there are two possibilities, one is a rational possibility and one is an irrational. Okay? When the people choose the irrational, then you have the right to look for the motive in the irrational part of the mind, which is namely the emotions or the unconscious.
I see.
And kind and loving and supportive, this wouldn't have occurred, is that right?
That's correct. It says in chapter, I think it's chapter 1. Yeah. So chapter 1, verse 29. This was after he's going over the story of the spies. And the spies came back and they said we should not go in because this nation is so powerful that we'll be destroyed. And they were very frightened of the... of the people in Israel. Okay? So Moshe said, and I said, don't be Don't be afraid of them.
Dread not.
Yeah, right. But God your Lord is going before you, will fight for you, just as you watched him do in Egypt. In the desert you also saw that God, your Lord, carried you along the road you traveled to this place, just as a man carries a son. But now here you have no faith in God your Lord. He goes before you in fire by night and a cloud by day to show you the path to follow, just like a scout finding you a place to camp. When God heard what you said, he angrily swore, "No man of this evil generation will see the good land that I swore to give your fathers," and et cetera. Okay? All right? So the thing is like this. Moshe's argument is based on certain facts that they have seen. It must be based on facts. In other words, if there were no facts that you could rely on, so then, okay, look, why should you trust God? You have no facts. So he goes over the facts that they do know. What do they know? They know what they saw in Egypt. They saw the ten plagues. They saw the crossing of the Red Sea. They saw the wars in the desert. Well, the first 2 years, I don't know how many wars they had in the first 2 years. And also, they saw the fire by night that led them, and the cloud by day that led them. So they had all these facts. Now the question is, okay, so all I'm trying to point out is that it's based on facts, okay? Based on this, I want to say it like this. If you could believe something or you know something, which is the stronger, which will keep you stronger in the situation? In other words, like this. Let's say somebody tells you that you shouldn't smoke. Okay, you believe the guy. You might believe the guy, you know what I mean? You might not. But let's say you see the insides of a person and you know about what happens when you smoke. You see what happens to the guy's lungs. You see the pictures of a healthy lung and an unhealthy lung. After a while, you start seeing different information. It becomes a fact to you, right? Now, which one is more likely not to start smoking, or which one is more likely to give up smoking if he already started smoking? It would be the one that knows. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. So I want to say that the stronger, it's always better to know than to believe. It's always stronger. Simultaneously, even if it's stronger, powerful emotions could help you deny facts. In other words, here you see the miracles that these people saw, and yet the powerful emotions made them not see it. Now, therefore, when powerful emotions make you not see the truth about God, that's when God gets angry. You have knowledge, and then you don't live according to that knowledge that's what gets God angry.
That's Jonathan in your case, Doug.
Repeat that, go ahead.
When you say that when powerful emotions help you not to see knowledge, then that makes God angry.
Right.
What exactly do you mean by angry, since, of course,
Well, that means he's going to... Whenever God gets angry, it means he's going to bring a punishment. But that's not my point here. My point here is that ignorance is a weak. In other words, if you accept something, even though you're ignorant of it and you don't have too much knowledge of it, that's a weak acceptance. Stronger acceptance is when you know without a doubt, or with you saw with your own eyes.
Right.
But still and all, emotions could block that out. And at that moment, it is not real. What happened with what you saw with your own eyes is not real. You see? And that is a catastrophe, except for a group of people that are on their level, what they saw, then they deserved punishment. Today, we don't see the miracles today. And therefore, by us, it's a matter of gaining knowledge to know that God operates in this way and to trust in God. It's not with my own five senses that I know it, but I must know it through the knowledge of Torah and through the study of Torah, so that it becomes real to me through knowledge, and even though I haven't seen it with my five senses.
Okay.